This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musician Spotlight. Today, we welcome back Chris Smither.
If I were young again, I'd pay attention to that little known dimension, the taste of endless time. It's just like water, it runs right through our fingers, but the flavor of it lingers like a rich red wine. In those days we were single, and we lived them one by one. Now we hardly see them, they don't walk, they run. But I got plenty left, I've set my sight on. Don't wait up, leave the light on, I'll be home soon. I never seen my life in such a hurry, but if I stop to worry, I get left behind. It's like a party, but you don't get invitations, and there's just one destination. You better be on time. For years we rhymed in couplets, and we sang them two by two. Now we hardly rhyme at all, but here's a few. And if they hurt, there's bullets left to bite on. Don't wait up, leave the light on. That drummer in my head needs inspiration. There's a lack of syncopation that holds me to a line. It's just so hard to leave these cages that we're thinking. By stages we just sink into a slow decline. For years we lived in waltz time, and we danced three by three. Now it's hard to dance, but if you stick with me, got what we need to spend the night on. Don't wait up, leave the light on, I'll be home soon. These races that we've run, not for glory, no moral to this story. We run for peace of mind, but the race we're running now is never ending. Since space and time are bending, there's no finish line. But I lived to be 100, I was born in 44. 39 to go, but I ain't keeping score. I've been left for dead before, but I still fight on. Don't wait up, leave the light on, I'll be home soon. I've been left for dead before, but I still fight on. Don't wait up, leave the light on, I'll be home soon.
This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. I'm very pleased to be welcoming back by phone today Chris Smither. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, John. Thanks a lot for having me on here.
Oh, it's a treat. It's a real treat to have you back on the program. And we were reminiscing just before we started the interview here that you've been on the show a couple times. The first time, I think, was over 20 years ago. And I believe that was with my co-host at the time, Brian Copper. And we also did an interview at the Targhee Fest in Targhee, Wyoming. And that festival put on by Voodoo Productions of Bozeman, Montana. And that's the Montana connection there. And that was the last time I think we sat down and had a face-to-face conversation. And in full disclosure, we also talked about the fact that I had the honor of opening a show for you in a funky, cool place in Portland called, and you remember the wooden ceilings of that place.
Oh, yeah. It was a funky place.
Yeah, it was cool. It was a great night. St. John's McMiniman's was the name of the the venue there. It was really, really fun. Good stuff there. Well, Chris is going to be very familiar to our listeners through a 50-year career of just an absolute consummate musician, consummate singer-songwriter and guitarist. numerous albums and an incredible list of performers that he's collaborated with, as well as his own recordings and performances over, as I said, over 50 years now. Smither.com, I believe, is the website, right?
That's correct. Either smither.com or chrissmither.com. Oh, okay. They both work.
Okay. Yeah. And More From the Levee is the most recent recording, and we're going to dive into that a little bit. Maybe let's start with, first of all, are you calling from, is it Amherst?
Yes, I'm calling from Amherst, Massachusetts. I'm sitting in my music room in the pulsing nerve center of Smither Music.
Well, I'm glad, A, that there's a nerve center to Smither Music and that is pulsing in these days of COVID pandemic. I'm glad it's still pulsing.
Yeah.
Going back and looking over your career and your history and so forth, I did remember that you currently are in Amherst, but you've lived all over the world. And if I'm not mistaken, you're born in New Orleans, correct? Or born in Miami and grew up in New Orleans.
That's right. Well, I was... Yeah, I was born in Miami. I lasted about 6 months there. I've been told this. It was in the last year of the last one or 2 years of World War II. We were there for 6 months. We went from there to Quito, Ecuador. We came back and spent six more months in the Rio Grande Valley in Texas, and then moved to New Orleans. And so from about age just before I turned 2 until I was 22, I lived in New Orleans.
Take us back to New Orleans. I mean, as much as you can remember from that, going that far back, but, you know, going forward from that time too, just New Orleans at that time.
It's, I loved it. It was a great place to grow up. It's one of those things that you don't think about too much until you leave, and people always are... It has a justified reputation as being one of the unique cities in the United States. But when you live there, you don't really know that, in a sense. It's just where you grew up. And it wasn't until I started living other places, and when I was a teenager, I went to Mexico City for a year, and then I went to Paris for another year, and I was actually in Paris for a year when I was 12, too. That was another sort of interlude. And then when I left New Orleans and went up to the Northeast, it was living in all those other places that made me realize what a distinctive sort of place I had grown up.
Let me ask you this. I mean, with all those different places, including, Mexico, South America, Paris, are there specific things that you can point to maybe musically that, I mean, to me, it's like, okay, when you talk about being from New Orleans, spending some time in Texas, and you listen to your music, and I'm kind of hearing elements, that I would associate with those places. Are there things in some of these other places that you think and can identify that found their way into your music, either in the actual music or in the lyrics?
Well, I think you may be closer to it talking about the lyric, because every place that I've lived, of course, influences me, and I write about things, I write about who I am and the way I think as much as anything. So probably more that than the actual musical influence. I know that New Orleans influenced my music a lot, although it's very difficult for me to pinpoint what those things are, but everybody else can pinpoint them. Everybody else looks at them and says, oh, I see. There's a song on the current record, More From the Levee, and it's called What I Do, and it addresses that question, the question that you asked, which is how did New Orleans affect your music? And it's not a question that it's easy for me to answer. It's much easier for other people to answer. And I go into it in the song. I say, well, fish don't really understand water, and birds don't really understand the air. It's just what they do, and that's kind of the way I am about New Orleans music.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what makes Chris Smither Chris Smither. That's brilliant. Good stuff.
Mm-hmm. I saw his neighbor on the front porch looking pretty stoned. His dog was in the backyard chewing on a bone, but there's nobody home. There wasn't nobody home. I saw a church with a sign. It was open, so I stepped inside. It said, double your misery back if you ain't satisfied. I thought this deal can't last. I better cash in quick. Get it all done before I get too sick to find my way outside. I saw a saint with his mouth open, carved out of stone. A preacher with his mouth shut, staring at his phone. But there's nobody home. There wasn't nobody home. I saw a big white house down on Pennsylvania.
Chris Smither joining us here on Musician's Spotlight. Chris, I also want to ask, in terms of, you know, your early days, if I'm not mistaken, getting a little bit inside your guitar work, that Lightning Hopkins was like kind of a pivotal artist that influenced you in your style and how you, you know, play the instrument that pushes your music out there.
He was one of the first. I was already playing. I didn't hear him until I was about 17 years old. And I've been playing with guitars and playing guitars and singing folk songs since I was 9 or 10. My first year of college, I was in Mexico City. And my roommate down there was from Texas. And he had a Lightning Hopkins album. And I was enchanted with it. I remember the album. It was on Prestige Bluesville, and it was called Blues in My Bottle. And I could not quit listening to it, not because it was blues. I didn't really understand the concept of blues, but because it sounded like rock and roll. And yet it was just one guy playing one guitar. And it was, you know, I'm a child of the 50s and 60s. You know, rock and roll is my... it's like mama's milk to me.
Yeah.
And so I would hear this, and I heard one man playing rock and roll. And I said, I have got to learn how to do that.
I'm so compelled by your lyrics, and just find anytime I'm listening to your work, I really get inside the lyrics in a way that, you know, I guess because primarily I'm a instrumental musician, or that's where I started, it's easier for me to get into the construction of the music and the harmony and melody and so forth. And sometimes it takes me longer to dive into the lyrical content, but your stuff just always just really jumps out at me and pulls me in. And I just wondered, you know, with your writing style and so forth, when did you feel like you really had a feel for really connecting with that and pulling the story in and then putting it out? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Songs are supposed to tell stories. I don't know where that concept came to me. I first started writing songs when I heard Dylan. I mean, Dylan was the one. People have asked me, was Dylan a big influence on your songwriting? And he was, but not on what I wrote. His main influence on me was the realization that the songs had to be written by somebody, and they didn't have to be things that you found someplace else. You could write them yourself. I mean, to me, that was a novel concept. I just hadn't occurred to me. You know, here I was singing all these old blues tunes, you know, and the men that I listened to playing those had written them themselves. You know, I just realized I've always been into the lyrics of other songs. You know, one of the things that attracted me to blues, besides it being rock and roll, was the simplicity and the accent that was placed, the emphasis that was placed on saying big things very briefly, very shortly. You know, you had only just this one little line that you had to be able to pack it into. And the story aspect of it is the way you get people to listen. To me, if you really want people to pay attention, you've got to give them a hook, and you got to bring them in. And continuity is what counts in that. It has to have a direction. There has to be something memorable about it, a storyline that even if you can't actually remember the words, you'll be able to remember that it went from point A to point B. And to me, that's what makes a successful song. And it's interesting you know, even Bob Dylan's, for instance, his most obscure songs, they tend to make you construct a story in your mind to make it all fit together. You might not know what he's talking about exactly, but you can make a storyline yourself. But there is one song, in fact, it's a song of Dylan's that I've covered. The song is called What Was It You Wanted? And I have never been able to construct a good storyline for that song. And as a result, it's almost impossible for me to remember the lyrics if I don't keep playing it almost every day.
What was it you wanted? Tell me again so I know. What's happening in there? What's going on in the show? What was it you wanted? Say it again. I'll be back in a minute. Get it together, baby. What was it you wanted? You can tell me I'm back. We can start it all over. Get it back on the track. You got my attention. Go ahead, speak. What was it you wanted when you were kissing my cheek? Was it somebody looking when you give me that kiss. Or someone there in the shadows, somebody I might have missed. Is it something you needed? Something I don't understand. What was it you wanted? Is it here in my hand? Whatever you wanted slipped out of my mind. Would you remind me again? Would you be so kind? Has the record been breaking? Did the needle just skip? Is there somebody waiting? Is it a slip of the lip? What was it you wanted? I ain't keeping score. Are you the same person that was here before? Is it something important? Maybe not. What was it you wanted? Say it again, I forgot. Whatever you wanted, what can it be? Did somebody tell you that you could get it from me? Is it something comes natural? Is it easy to fake? Why do you want it? Who are you anyway? Is the scenery changing? Am I getting? It's all going backwards. Are they playing a song? Where were you when it started? Do you want it for free? What was it you wanted? Are you talking to me? Are you talking to me? Talking to me.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight, and we are speaking today by phone with Chris Smither, who is checking in with us from Amherst, Massachusetts. Chris, let's talk about the most recent recording project, More from the Levee. And you were mentioning a little bit earlier that it's kind of a, there's like one new tune, and a lot of it is retrospective. Or it would revisitation be a good way to look at how you're approaching these tunes?
Well, you know, it was part of a project. It's a little misleading to call it a new recording, because the recording is actually 5 or 6 years old. It was part of a project that we did 5 or 6 years ago called Still on the Levee. And that was a project that we undertook about the right about and around the 50th anniversary of my being in this business. And we went back down to New Orleans and parked ourselves there for about 3 weeks, almost a month. And we recorded 40 or 50 songs from my back catalog. And we had so many songs left over that we didn't know what to do with. We didn't really want to put out a triple CD. And we thought to ourselves, you know, there'll come a time when we're going to need these, when we're going to want to put these out for some, you know, whatever. And so we'll just sit on them. We got them, you know. It's nice to know that there's something in the vault. And then we went on, and, you know, 3 years later, I did another album of new material called Call Me Lucky. And then, you know, last year, about a year ago, the people who organize Record Store Day, sort of a celebration of record stores, they called and asked us, invited us to participate in 2020 Record Store Day. They wanted to know if we had something that we could release on vinyl. And so then we went back and we listened to these tunes that we still had, you know, in the can. And I remember David Goodrich, Goody, my producer, and I sat there and listened to him, and we would listen to one after another, and we'd say, why didn't we put that one on the on the original? I can't believe, I mean, they just sounded so good to us. I remember we thinking back 5 years ago that they seemed a little skeletal, because once we had decided what we were going to put on the others, we didn't really do any further work on these. And then, but we listened to them, you know, just last year, and we thought, oh man, this is this is the way we should do the next record, because it sounds so good, you know, so spare, just a little piano here and some drums there, you know, and nothing really elaborate, no overdubbing. It just sounds so clean and so powerful. And when we've been in New Orleans for a few days, now you have to understand, Goody had never been to New Orleans for any long period of time, but he was immediately entranced. We were living uptown in a nice, you know, sort of in the Garden District, a little bit downtown from the Garden District, but, you know, eating a lot of good food. And he was saying, man, you've got to write a song for this project. He says, this is so cool. He says, you got to write something, and it has to have something to do with New Orleans. And I said, no, I don't want to do it. And he said, I didn't feel like working that hard. I'd already had to work so hard to get some of these songs back into playable condition. But he finally talked me into it. And so I wrote this tune called What I Do, that you know, we have already had that little conversation about it. And I liked it, and we recorded it. But I didn't trust it, because I don't trust brand new. I hate going into the studio and recording songs that have just been finished. Normally I like to spend time, you know, playing them in front of audiences for, you know, a month or two, something like that, you know, to find out how it goes over, and if it doesn't go over, why it doesn't go over, and do a little tweaking on it, you know, and bring it out to its full. So that may be one of the reasons that it didn't get picked for the initial release. But when we went back and we listened to it, and I thought to myself, there's nothing wrong with this at all. This is great. It's really fine. And now I'm happy with it. And in fact, it's sort of launched itself again and elbowed its way into the current repertoire in a big way. And people really like it. Down
in Nola, where we listen. We'll be back with more Musician Spotlight and our visit with Chris Smither. Welcome back to Musicians Spotlight and our visit with Chris Smither.
Down in Nola, where we listen, some of that, some of this, in keys beyond the normal range. Everything's a little strange, but mostly it's a place to be. Got to leave, it's for you, see, it sticks to you. I left before you did me in. Down and dirty, don't begin to talk about my state of mind. All I wanted was to find a way to get between the funky and the plain cleaner too. Forget about my feelings, I don't mind, but don't forget that second line. Can't you come on out and play? Let's see what you got today. How you make it sound that way, I never know just what you say. It's beans and rice, sticky nights, hateful fate, keep it in the groove. It just comes out that way, won't go back in like gumbo running down your chin. Filet's just a little thin, but slick as glass, dark as sin, with downbeats on the upside just to take you for a ride and make it move. I see, they say, well, no wonder, it's a miracle. Fish don't understand the water, they just do the things they ought to. Birds don't understand the air, they don't even know it's there. They don't have a clue, but just like me, they do the things they do. It's what I do, it's what I do, it's what I do.
Chris Smither joining us here on Musicians Spotlight. Chris, one of the things that I remember from one of our past conversations was the concept of an artist realizing, and it seems like such an obvious thing, the concept of, you know, it not being about you and not being about, and but it being about the music. Right. And I recall this story that you told about being, I think, in like a songwriter circle somewhere. Mm-hmm. And you found yourself getting frustrated with something. Something, I don't know if it was the monitors or maybe some of the other writers, whatever. And, or what am I doing? You know, I was thinking I'd be at a better fest. I can't remember what it was that was kind of annoying you. And then you said you had this realization, oh, it's really not about me. It's about the music. And as I recall, I mean, this was, you were well into your career when you had this, you know, had this kind of, revelation maybe a bit much, but.
It was a revelation. It was a revelation.
Yeah, because that's how I remembered it.
Yeah, I remember this very well. In fact, somebody just last week asked me a question that led me to revisit that very thing. I think they asked me if there had come a moment the question at that point was, did I have any advice, you know, for up and coming musicians who were trying to, you know, make a career. And, I dip back to that same story. It's amazing that you remember that, because it happened, I can tell you, it happened in Winnipeg, Canada, at a big festival, the Winnipeg Folk Festival, a very fine festival at that. And I was annoyed. I was on stage. I thought I had been promised that, you know, a main stage spot to myself, and I wound up being on stage with, you know, 5-piece bands and everybody, this sort of a round robin song circle thing, you know, where everybody got a total of maybe 10 minutes. And I was so annoyed, you know, at that the whole situation of being lumped in. And there were other solo musicians who were kind of mad about being lumped in, just because we all played sort of blues inflected stuff. They all assumed that we could play together. and it was that night. I was on stage, you know, the lights were on, everybody was playing, and I kept thinking, I've got to shake this mood. I've got to shake this mood. And it suddenly came over me that, you know, what I was worried about was the way I was going to look, not the way the music was going to sound, not the way people were going to hear it, but I was worried about myself.
To follow up what you're saying, Chris, one of the things that stood out to me when I had the chance to, as a musician, perform a show with you, was to sit back and see you perform. And one of the things that struck me, and I'm assuming this was probably after this incident that you've just talked about, where you realized it's about the music, was just how comfortable you were in your own skin. And that was so inspiring to me to see, like, oh, okay, this part of the journey is you got to get yourself together, you know, enough so that you're comfortable, at least in that setting. You know, it may not be in every setting, but at least in that setting, you got to be comfortable enough in your own skin. And that certainly came through to me that night I had a chance to see you up close in Portland.
It is a comfort, you know, and what we were just talking about, that sort of little moment of revelation to me is what contributes to that, because if you're dealing with the music, you're dealing with something that you understand. You're dealing with something that understands you. You've already established that relationship. The only thing that you're trying to do is make sure that the audience understands what that relationship is. And you are comfortable in your skin because you're dealing with a friend at that point.
Ah, that's a great way to put it.
And the audience will see that. You know, the audience will see that you are comfortable.
Right. So true.
I don't know if you've ever noticed this. You can go to a show, and I go to plenty of shows, and try to see new people, try to see, you know, some of the younger musicians coming up, and you can tell. You can watch somebody walk onto the stage, and you can tell whether they're comfortable. And it's an interesting thing. If they're comfortable, there's a feeling that comes over you as you watch them that I'm in good hands. I don't have to hold this person up, and that's another thing that musicians have to learn, is that it's not an adversarial relationship. The audience is on your side. They want you to be good.
I'm laughing out of recognition because that's something I know I've struggled with as a musician. I know that that other
everybody
players
does.
Have talked. Yeah, like. I'm in enemy territory, actually. That's what you go through your mind. Like, no, you're not. You can't go forward thinking you're in enemy territory.
Correct. But everybody suffers from that. And the sooner you get over it, the better off you are.
Can't you see? I can't explain. I'm a little like a link of chain, just a ring around another. Running in and out again, fly me on a kite like smiling like a gold mine. I don't need to pray to go to the end, that'll do to hold me another, running in and out again.
Chris Smither joining us here on Musicians Spotlight. Chris, I wanted to kind of do a little program host indulgence here. Mm-hmm. Always one of my favorite songs of yours. Goes back a few years now, but I know that it's one that a lot of folks are very fond of. And I think it's one of your favorites too, as I recall. And that's I Am the Ride. And uh-huh. I wanted to know if you could just maybe talk a little bit about that and what your, and it sounds kind of funny, but what your relationship with that song is like now in 2020, as opposed to when you wrote it.
Ah, interesting. You know, I wrote that song when I first started to realize some of the things that we've just been talking about over the last, 10 or 15 minutes here. And it also came out of my first sort of putting my big toe into the waters of meditation and trying to achieve some sort of serenity and apply some Buddhist principles to the way I live and think about things. And it just occurred to me one day, the line came to me, I'm not a passenger, I'm the ride. And I'm not just along for the ride, is what I meant. I am the ride. This is the ride. And there's a distinction there. And it's only grown stronger. I put that song out to pasture for a little while. People would ask for it, and I'd think to myself, well, it's been such a long time since I've played it. I don't think I could do it justice. But recently, within the last 2 years, it's come back into rotation. And that's actually been one of the nice things about the enforced quarantine and sequestration. I sit here in my music room and I have time and inclination to go back and brush up on some of the older tunes, and you find new things about them, and you find things that surprise you about them. You think to yourself, well, how did I know that? I wrote that song, 25 years ago. How did I know that then? When I feel like it's something of a revelation to me right now. Well, the fact is, you didn't really know it back then, but you knew enough about it to hint at it, and then your older and we hope wiser self looks at the hints and says, oh, I see what he's talking about, but he didn't really know what he was talking about way back then.
And am I correct that either inspired a movie or became part of a movie? What's the story there?
Yes, it did. It was John Flanders, a filmmaker and an actor. He moved to Belgium for a while, but I think he's back in Los Angeles now. Yeah, he did a short film called The Ride. The protagonist was somebody who, closely resembled me, a singer-songwriter who got sort of burned out and blown up and went for a ride and picked up a hitchhiker someplace in the desert. He starts venting to the hitchhiker once he gets him in the car. He starts venting and talking about how everything was blowing up and all. And then you look over and the hitchhiker is scribbling on a piece of paper. And then the hitchhiker hands the piece of paper to our protagonist, and it says, I'm deaf.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's fascinating.
And the dynamic just takes off from there. It goes on. And it's only about a 25-minute little short, It goes on about this guy whose whole life, whose whole everything, that all of his problems, all of his successes, everything about his life has to do with sound. And he's confronted in close quarters, with somebody who can't make heads or tails of it. So.
Forms are loosely fitting, juries still are sitting, a sense of duty keeps us all in motion. Prison sirens wailing that security is failing do not inspire a lifetime of devotion. No one will sympathize, no one really tries. They need a face that leads them like a drum, and I can hear it pounding down among the ruins. Sad to say, I don't think I'm the only one. I woke, someone spoke, they asked me in a whisper if all my dreams and visions had been answered. I don't know what to say, I never even pray. I just feel the pulse of universal dancers. They'll waltz me till I die, never tell me why. I never think to ask them where we're going, but the holy, the profane, we're all helplessly the same, wishful, hopeful, but never really knowing. Or is it all a comforting invention? It's just like gravity, I said. It ain't a product of my head. It doesn't speak, but nonetheless commands attention. And I don't care what it means or who decorates the scenes. The problem is more with my sense of pride, instead of what it is to be. I'm not a passenger, I am the ride. I'm not a passenger, I am the ride.
Chris, I feel like I would be remiss in, you know, asking you to kind of comment on the relationship you have with a song that you wrote many years ago if I don't ask you about Love Me Like a Man. And I, of course, and I have told this another Chris Smithers story over the years of how I'm trying to remember where you were, and you got into this argument with this with some young woman who was a musician. I want to say it was in Alaska or something, and she was just sure that you were a liar and that you had it called you a liar to your face. You didn't write that song. So right. Beyond
well,
that,
I've been told to my face that I did not write that song. But the woman in Alaska was actually dealing with a friend of mine. A friend of mine, he told me this story. You know, he'd gone to a bar to hear a blues band, and the lead singer was a woman, and then she did a, you know, according to my friend, did a really bang up version of Love You Like a Man, or Love Me Like a Man, depending on your perspective. And after they finished the set, he told her, he said, you know, my friend Chris is really going to be happy. I'm going to tell him that I saw you playing his song. And the woman said, his song? And Zach says, yeah. And he said, Chris Smither, he wrote that song. And she just looked at him. She says, there was not a guy that wrote that song. That's impossible. And he just left it at that. It was the way she said it, it didn't seem to brook any kind of argument. But, you know, I've been told that before. Mm-hmm. I've been told that I've had people come up to me and tell me that they rather like the way that I've changed the song from the way Bonnie did it, you know.
I wonder if Richard Thompson gets the same thing about the dimming of the day.
I'll bet he does. I'll bet he does.
No way you wrote that. That's got to be Bonnie Raitt. Well, just, maybe talk a little bit more about, like, when you approach that song now, I mean, obviously it's going to be one that I mean, the folks that come to hear your shows are, I'm guessing they're going to go deep with the Chris Smither catalog. But obviously that's one that's going to, and that's one of the things I really admire about your career is that you've inspired that kind of devotion in the folks that follow your work. But there's got to be, you know, that moment where you bust that one out and everybody's like, oh yeah, that's that one. I know that one.
Well, my relationship to Love You Like a Man is one of intense gratitude. most of the world doesn't know me. You know, especially in comparison to someone like Bonnie Raitt or Diana Krall, both of whom recorded that song, right. And you know, most people don't pay much attention to who wrote the song. You know, to be candid about it, which doesn't mean that it doesn't still make me a lot of money. You know, it does, and I'm quite comfortable with that. The thing about Love You Like a Man is whether I like to play it anymore or not, and I don't play it nearly as often as I used to. Although, again, you know, that's one that gets revisited from time to time, and I think, oh, well, this is kind of fun to play. And so I you know, for a month I will play it. But one of the beauties of that song is that it's one of the few things that I can point to and say, you made a mark here, because it has become a standard. It's become a blues standard. It is very difficult to find a blues band with a female lead singer that doesn't do that song at some point. Yeah. And it's thrilling. And I can tell you quite truthfully that it doesn't matter to me whether it's a good performance or a bad performance. When I hear somebody do that song, it's a thrill. Mm. It's always a thrill to hear somebody do one of your songs. All these men you've been seeing, they got their balls up on the shelves. And you know they could never love you, baby. They can't even love themselves. You need someone who can. I could be, you know, I could be your lover man. Come on, believe me when I tell you I love you like a man. Cause I never seen such losers, I'll bet you never tried to find a man that could take you home, never taking you for a ride. If you need someone who can, I could be, I bet I could be your lover man. Come on, believe me when I tell you I love you like a man. Coming home sad, you laying down to cry. What you need is a man to hold you, not some fool to ask you why. And yeah, you know you need someone who can. Come on, believe me when I tell you I love you like a man. Yeah, cause they all want you to rock them like their back ain't got no bone. What you need is a man that can rock you like your backbone was his own. You need someone who can. I think I could be your lover man. Come on, believe me when I tell you I love you like a man. Yes, cause all these men that you've been seeing got their balls up on the shelves. And you know they can never love you, baby. They can't even love themselves. You need someone who can. And I know I could be your lover man. Believe me when I tell you I love you like I love you. Love you like I love you like a man.
Chris chrissmither.com or smither.com. Either one of those sites will be good ones to go to on the internet to find out more about what Chris is up to. More from the Levee is the most recent release, not necessarily a new recording, but a new release. And great stuff, just fantastic stuff. I'm really excited to dive in a little bit deeper with that recording myself. And thank you so much for making time to join us again on Musician Spotlight. I'm sorry that we're having to do this via phone. I've always enjoyed our face-to-face conversations, and it just was a real treat to get a chance to speak with you again here on Musician Spotlight. So thanks for making the time to hang out with us here and talk shop.
It's been a pleasure, John. You're a very easy person to talk to.
Thank you.
Ba-ba-dee-ba-da-bo. Well, Eve told Adam, snakes, I've had them. Let's get out of here. Go raise this family someplace out of town. They left the garden just in time with the landlord cussing right behind. They headed east and they finally settled down. One thing led to another, a bunch of sons, one killed his brother, and they kicked him out with nothing but his clothes. And the human race survives, cause all those brothers found wives, but where they came from, they ain't nobody knows. Then came the flood, go figure, just like New Orleans, only bigger. No one who couldn't swim would make it through. The lucky ones were on a boat, thanks circus.
This is John Floridis. You've been listening to Musician Spotlight. Our guest today has been Chris Smither. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org, as well as through our own website, musicianspotlight.org. You can also find us online on Facebook and on Twitter. Our program is available as a podcast from those websites, as well as through iTunes and Spotify. Musicians Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.